good.
Good morning, everyone. I'm opening today's Revenue Committee meeting for Friday. Hope we're all looking forward to a good weekend. We have a couple of things on our agenda today, mostly around property tax. I think we'll just go into our public hearings, take the agenda in order. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3261. Day, would you put us in the picture?
Sure. Chair Berger, members of the committee, House Bill 3261 is about when the Department of Revenue issues a tax warrant in relation to taxpayers' unpaid tax bills. And I think the Department of Revenue can explain the details of it.
Deborah, come on up.
And Madam Chair,
yes.
While they're coming, let me explain that this issue was one that I worked during the interim. There was a number of detailed problems with the area, and I'm sure they can explain what the key issues were. I'm not certain that the bill's yet ready to move, but I think we're getting a little closer. Please.
Thank you for... Yes. Go ahead, Deborah.
Thank you. Chair Berger, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. If I could take you back about 20 years to 1989, the Oregon legislature adopted a bill at that time that was titled the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. A part of that is a section 305.895 that requires the Department of Revenue to issue a warrant prior to attaching any property of the taxpayer, and property would include personal property, cash, assets, etc. So under that statute, we must send a notice and demand, and if within 30 days there's not payment, then we have to send a warrant before we can issue a garnishment or attach a federal tax refund. That statute refers to the contents of the warrant as provided in ORS 314.430, which is what you see in House Bill 3261. So under 314.430, the notice that we send of warrant must include information of commanding the sheriff to levy upon and sell real and personal property of the taxpayer. So as you might imagine, if someone has not been able to pay the tax and has entered into an installment agreement with us and is making timely payments on that, they can be very surprised when they receive a warrant and writ of execution, such as I have asked staff to present to you this morning, and the bold words at the top are distraint warrant and writ of execution. You read down further, and it talks about commanding the sheriff to levy upon and sell the property. So every year when we send these notices to people prior to federal tax refunds going out, we get a lot of calls and concerns from those taxpayers who are timely with their payments and yet are very concerned that they've received this notice, and we understand that concern. We have worked over the last few years with our attorneys trying to make this more user-friendly and less threatening, but their concern, of course, is it needs to be legally sufficient. It needs to meet the requirements in the law, and for that reason, we can't eliminate the words that refer to the sheriff and being commanded to seize the property. So that was the issue, as I understand it, that Chair Barnhart wanted to work on during the interim. I believe what the bill does in the amendment in Section 1 would separate the information about the sheriff from the notice that goes out to the taxpayer, so that in the first case we would be able to delete the language that is now at the bottom of that notice that refers to the sheriff, and instead tell them that this is a warrant. It means that we will be collecting your refund or attaching other property or garnishing. You'll note in the first paragraph that it does refer to payment plans, and it says it does not change the terms of the plan. But I think people often miss that and miss the significance of that. So that's the objective of the bill, as I understand that part of it. The language in Section 2 is making similar changes to the cigarette tax statutes. That's the 323-390. And in Section 323-610 is the other tobacco tax products, so similar changes in that statute. The Section 4 is information that we do now have on the notice, although talking about the installment plans. And then Section, on page 4, lines 5 through 9, I think that may be the part that needs a little bit of additional work. Our systems currently wouldn't allow us to put a summary of all the payments that have been received by the department in the notice that's going out. So that would have some programming costs for us. But I would say that we have made progress in getting our website set up so that taxpayers can access their account online and see the payments that they've made and what their balance is. So with that, I would try to answer any questions you may have. Thank you, Chair Berube.
Yeah, thank you. Questions and comments? Yeah, Representative Barnhart.
Yeah, just to make certain I understand, do you think with some minor changes this bill would work for your purposes?
Chair Barnhart, yes, I do. I think that this is something that we would look at as being a positive step.
And is it primarily line 8 and 9 on page 4, or does it include something else? That was the part you referred to. Or maybe not. Yeah, I think it is.
Chair Berger, Representative Barnhart, I think that is probably the part that needs the work. The rest of it I do think can work.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other further comments? I think we'd like to hear from the Sheriff's Association. John Powell, you've signed up. And see what their thinking on this is. Thank you.
Co-Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is John Powell, representing the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. Madam Chair, if your question to me is, what am I thinking? I'm thinking I'd like to be in Hawaii right now.
I would totally agree.
I know nothing about warrants. I want to know nothing about those subjects. Madam Chair and members of the committee, the sheriffs have a bill in on this subject. It's in the Judiciary Committee. And there's nothing in this bill that they directly oppose, but there were some issues that they have identified as needing work, similar to the Department of Revenue's testimony. So with that, Madam Chair, I would simply say give us some time to get together and work on those issues. And the bill we have in Judiciary is House Bill 2693.
93, House Bill.
Okay.
So, in summary, you agree that this issue needs work.
Yes.
And you need to work together with Department of Revenue to find common sort of solutions.
I don't think
and it may be this bill and it may be another bill, but right. You're okay.
Right.
I think that.
Yeah.
I think we can all say that's a great idea. Any further questions for Mr. Hawaii? Go ahead.
Just a comment, Madam Chair. There is serendipity in the world, as the great Jungian psychologist once said, and it appears that this extremely important and crucial topic has come up in several places at the same time.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. I think that we will ask them to go forth and talk to each other. Aloha, Mr. Powell. With that, I think we'll be hearing more at some point on this bill, and I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3261. and open a public hearing on House Bill 3253. Day.
Mr. Berger, members of the committee, this House Bill 3253 modifies provisions relating to county local option property tax levies.
This appears to be a bill from Representative Wand. And Representative Wand, welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Co-Chair Berger, Co-Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. I'm Matthew Wand, State Representative from House District 49, covering Troutdale, Fairview, Wood Village, Rockwood, and parts of Gresham. Imagine, if you will, that you're living in a house with your spouse valued at $200,000, and an operating levy comes before you on the ballot. And you and your spouse each have one vote, and you will be taxed under this operating levy $1 per thousand. Your neighbor in a house that is 50 years older than your house, also valued at $200,000, has a significant other. They will pay nothing, and both of them get four votes. The analogy I've just described to you is essentially what takes place in Multnomah County with regard to operating levies and how they operate. In East County, we are outvoted by a significant and heavy margin by the city of Portland. In addition to which, after these operating levies pass, because the city of Portland has older homes and because of the way that compression works, they pay substantially less than us. It is a recurring inequity in the tax system that substantially influences the way that we perceive each other as neighbors in my county and the way that we work through operating levy issues. I spoke with the Multnomah County Assessor about this problem over the course of a couple of months, trying to determine exactly what the scope of the problem really is. I knew it existed, but I couldn't quantify it. The example that we took was the operating levy for the Multnomah County Library, which I support. The way that that operating levy worked, it was 89 cents per thousand. After the compression formula was applied to homes and properties throughout the county, the average rate per thousand paid by the city of Portland property owners was 77 cents per thousand. The average rate paid by city of Troutdale property owners was 88.5 cents per thousand. The average effective rate for folks owning property in unincorporated Multnomah County was the full 89 cents per thousand. It is this fundamental inequity in our property tax system that I undertook to try to resolve over the course of the last several months. I met with folks from LC. I met with folks from the Multnomah County Assessor several times. I worked through the experts as much as I could find them in the field. My initial thought was that really the fairest way to move forward on this type of an issue was to take the lowest effective rate for anyone in the county and simply apply it to everyone. Really, when you have similarly situated individuals, they ought to pay the same amount for a tax as much as possible. That didn't work, as the Multnomah County Assessor ably pointed out, because the way the compression formula works, we would have ended up in an endless loop of calculations and recalculations that never would have gotten us to a final answer. Worse than that, unbeknownst to me, before I entered into this process, there actually are properties in the county that pay nothing on this particular levy because they are in a compression situation that results in them paying nothing at all for any operating levies. So that would have, of course, defeated the purpose in the first place as well. So as we were having these discussions trying to undo this guardian knot, what we determined is that and I forget who had the brainstorm, so I can't give credit where credit is due, but it was not me. Why wouldn't we average the effective rate from 1 year and apply the average effective rate as the starting point for the following year? So that's what this bill does. For example, take the library operating levy. I think since that was what I was working on to start off with, that's the easiest one to take. Under this bill, the effective rate for year one is 89 cents per thousand. That gets run through the process, calculated as before. You determine an effective rate for that operating levy applicable to all properties in the county. and it gives you, nets you a certain amount of money for the operating levy. In year two, you take the effective rate for each property, you average them, and that becomes your starting point for year two. You do the same thing for years 3, 4, and 5, and what you end up with is an infinitely regressive curve that never gets you to exact equality. It cannot exactly and precisely solve the problem that I wanted it to. But in each successive year of an operating levy, the difference and the disparity between folks in one area of the county versus folks in another area of the county gets less. Now, of course, no action with regard to property taxes is devoid of any reaction. What this means is that when you are calculating out how to run your operating levy and how to ask the voters for funds for necessary and important programs, what you have to do is add one more level to the calculation, and you have to determine what this curve of income will be over the life of the operating levy. What I've learned through this process is that the people that work on these levies are highly intelligent and skilled mathematicians. And I have the utmost confidence that setting the rules in place ahead of time, which is what I'm asking with this bill, will still allow them to properly and with a high degree of certainty calculate the amount of revenue that will come in. To be sure, in year one, more money will come in than in year five. But they already do this calculation ahead of time when they know how much funds they want to have for the operations of the object of the operating levy. And if they can do it now on a straight line basis to ensure, for example, that they have $15 million a year for libraries, if that's the number, then surely they can do the same thing with an infinitely regressive curve. What do we gain from this? I mean, it's one thing to identify a problem and have a proposed solution, and this is not a perfect solution. There might be some perfect solutions out there, but this is the best that we could come up with. But what we gain is something that is priceless and represents my core values, which is we begin to chip away at the animosity that is taking place in the urban-rural divide in my community. We begin to chip away at the constant and consistent irritation of knowing that one group of our county outvotes us, and just as a double whammy, when they outvote us, they pay less. I submitted this bill hoping to get support. There's a full room of folks behind me saying this is the wrong answer. That's okay. That's a part of the process. I hope that we can find the right answer someday, because this situation is a problem that simply cannot continue without being addressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Got questions for Representative Warren before? Yes.
Thank you. I just want to clarify. So this is, are you talking about adding an additional level of disclosure on the, or are you talking about an actual mathematical formula of collection?
It's a mathematical, Co-Chair Berger, Representative Eric Brewer, it's a mathematical calculation. I would expect, although I did not research, that the elections laws would require folks that are proposing this type of operating levy under this bill would have to identify their calculations as part of their disclosures in the voters' pamphlet. But again, I did not do that research, so I don't know for sure.
Thank you.
Representative Gelser, your brow is knitted. Do you have a question?
I'm just pondering.
Okay, thank you.
if I may add one more item, Kutcher Berger, I am not bringing this because I'm opposed to operating levies. I'm not bringing this because I'm opposed to libraries or schools or historical societies or anything else. This truly is a situation. It's prospective only. Would not apply to anything that exists now, and that was intentional. I didn't want anyone to be caught unawares, and I do believe, since it's a math formula, that they can predict the outcome with certainty. So, thank you.
Yes, Representative Gelser, I knew you had a question 1 minute later.
It's a question and comment. I think the first is thank you for bringing forward a creative idea. I think that is always a great thing. I was in your shoes a couple of weeks ago with a school consolidation bill in front of the Education Committee, and I preferred to call it the bill that united the entire education community. It's me.
Yes. We know about that.
I appreciate where you sit right now. I'll be interested to hear the testimony, interested to talk to more about it offline. I think the one caution that I would have on that issue of it being prospective is that because we have so many local governments that are so dependent on these local option levies, and my district, my school district, is desperately dependent upon its local option levy. It actually pays for 20% of our school budget comes through our local option levy. One out of every five teachers in my school district is paid for with our local option levy, and we have to go out and renew that every 5 years. And because you don't want to be right up at the end of the line and lose, we go out and renew it every 3 to 4 years. So to yes, that would be prospective, and this current levy that we just passed this fall would be protected, but it clearly could have an impact moving forward in terms of how you're communicating with the voters. Are you doing a tax increase when you're just really trying to maintain what you have? I think disclosure and fairness and equity are things that we always need to strive for in our property tax system. Unfortunately, Measure 5 and 50 created a morass of confusing regulations that really don't make any sense to anyone. And if you really want to see that, go and run a local option levy campaign and try to help people figure out how much that's really going to cost them and why their neighbor will pay nothing and they'll pay $1.50. And that seems inequitable until you realize that $1.50 that the neighbor is paying is the $1.50 that the person that's paying nothing is already paying without the local option levy. I think the real answer to these things is to go back, reform Measure 5, reform Measure 50, go back to common sense property tax systems, and restore the power of local governments, school districts, counties, and cities, and their local voters to make choices for how they want to build their communities and pay for them, and for schools having some equalization in that as well. But it certainly is an issue that begs solutions, and I commend you for coming up with an idea to bring it forward. I look forward to hearing the rest, but gosh, we got to protect those levies, because in my district, we can't afford to lose one in five of our teachers. We just absolutely can't.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, let's hear from these. Yeah. Gil Rydell, we want you to come up as a panel. Nancy Bennett and David Berenberg, and we'll take you in that order. David, he's City of Portland's runaway.
He's on the phone.
Okay, we'll get him. Thank you for coming, Gil, if you'll proceed.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Gil Rydell, Association of Oregon Counties. And first of all, I want to express our appreciation to Representative Juan for his interest in reducing the inequities in this property tax system that we know is a mess in many ways, and for trying to heal rural urban divide in this state that's been a kind of a cancer, I think, to our culture. I think, however, it's useful to quickly review the current protections for property taxpayers in the context of this bill. In 1997, Measure 50 set the initial assessed value of a property for tax year 97-98 as 90% of its real market value in tax year 95-96. It set a 3% growth limit on assessed value of the property. It set the then current tax rates as permanent, notwithstanding dramatically changed fiscal circumstances, such as the new federal forest management policies and the resulting drop in federal shared revenues to counties and schools. Measure 50 put new property on the tax rolls at equal stature to current property under the appropriate change property ratio of the county. And it retained Measure 5 with its tax rate limits and compression. For counties alone in tax year 2009-10, over $16 million of funds for important public services were not collected by counties due to compression. Measure 5 compression operates first on local option levies. This bill applies a new further compression on local option levies. Property tax is still the core source of revenue for county public services, and a local option levy can be critical. The Linn County and Clackamas County both have deep stakes in their public safety local option levies to protect their citizens. AOC is concerned that any further limits on the lockdown property tax system would seriously jeopardize critical public services the taxpayers rely on. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I'll hear from all of them and then take questions. Nancy.
Good morning, Co-Chair Berger, Co-Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. I'm Nancy Bennett. I'm here today on behalf of Multnomah County. And I'm going to share a couple of our concerns, but I think if we have technical questions, our assessor is also here today to answer those if you have them. So I think, you know, first and perhaps most importantly, we're concerned about the potential loss of revenue to local government and particularly our library levy, as we've already heard about a little bit. You know, we understand this bill is prospective, but and wouldn't affect our current operation, but our current levy expires next year, and we anticipate renewing that. And I think using current estimates, our library alone would lose $6 million in the first year. The vast majority of our revenue for our library system in Multnomah County is paid from this levy. So the loss of revenue for us means that either we look at cutting services for our libraries, or we try to find that money in our county general fund. I can tell you we're very concerned about what we anticipate are significant cuts from the state for our county general fund in terms of public safety, health and human services, and the like. And so any additional cuts to local revenue are very concerning to us. Secondly, and I think this has already been mentioned by a number of you, is adding additional complications to an already very complicated property tax system. There's no question that the system is flawed, overly complicated, and in many cases deeply unfair. And, in fact, our former chair, Ted Wheeler, has testified, I think, before this committee and certainly the Senate Revenue Committee about the inequities in our tax system. We would love to find a solution to that. We think that, as Representative Gelser mentioned, it needs to be done in a more comprehensive manner. I think if we just take a bite out of one piece, we end up creating issues and problems in another part of the system. So we you know, we have some significant concerns about this particular approach and would welcome conversation about addressing the larger inequities in the system. Know that that's politically very difficult to do, but at some point I hope our state can take that on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Berger, Chair Barnhart, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. Also in the audience is a familiar face in a new role. Our city economist, Josh Harwood, is here and to help with the technical questions that may arise. Just to build upon the previous panel members, the committee this week has had before it this measure and another piece of legislation that go at addressing this issue in absolutely opposite manners. HJR 26 addresses this issue by saying everybody will pay the same amount for every levy because we take it out of compression. So it takes an approach of creating a new and rational structure for levies versus what this measure does, which I think, as Ms. Bennett said, layers an additional exception change on a system that already isn't rational and creates unintended consequences in terms of the ratcheting down effect and the lowering of revenue with every year that the levy is in place. The issue of properties in compression and out of compression aren't just a county versus city thing issue. Within the city, there are properties, property by property. There are some in compression, some not in compression. So we would prefer an approach to pass the other vehicle that you had before you, HJR 26, send to the people, and put forward a solution that would address this problem in a progressive, clear way and let the people vote on it. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Questions, Mr. Wan, Representative Wan.
Thank you, Co-Chair Berger. Are cities and counties unable to save revenues from year one of an operating levy to cover the ratcheting down effect in years 2, 3, 4, and 5?
Don't all answer at once. If we have expertise in the room that you'd like to bring forward to answer that question, please feel free.
Madam Chair, that should be a pretty straightforward answer. Of course, it's a political decision to be made during the budgeting process.
Well, so what I hear you saying is they certainly could choose to properly calculate the ratcheting down effect, collect more in year one, save some of that money so that there is a flat spending for the life of the operating levy. They certainly could choose to do that.
At a lower amounts, yes.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Chair Berger and members of the committee, the issue there also is one that it becomes harder to explain to the public, that we're going to be collecting more money in year one than we are in subsequent years where costs are more expensive. I think it just complicates our explaining how the tax system operates, and we're having a hard enough time having a linkage for the public with how it operates as it is. It is another outlier that rationally is difficult to explain.
Further questions for this panel? I have a couple. Gil, are there other counties that have an obvious and similar issue where you have a voting block that goes one way and it costs others who, there's sort of an imbalance there? I mean, it's pretty obvious in East Multnomah County and the situation. Are there other counties that have similar sort of profiles?
Yes, there are, Madam Chair. The one that comes to mind is Gillam County, right off the bat. They have a city or two, and they're in compression, and the outlying areas are not. So this is one of those consequences of what the people have decided in 1990 and 1997 with Measures 5 and 50.
Thank you. I have a question basically of staff. We have looked at tax reform of our income tax system at various times. Have we ever done legislatively a comprehensive look at possible changes to our property tax system? Paul, I'm going to ask you to put you on the spot here and ask you to come up and answer that.
Madam Chair, Paul Warner, let's say Revenue Office. The question on kind of what the committee has done in terms of 5 and 50, of course, the 97 committee was devoted all of its time to creating Measure 50 in response to Measure 47. But since that time, I think there's been a couple of things. I wouldn't say there's been a task force that's had that particular charge. The Comprehensive Revenue Restructuring Task Force, which was created following the 07 session, spent a lot of time on this issue. If you look back on that big document, there are kind of a list of potential options that would alleviate some of the problems that have arisen. But there wasn't any kind of a consensus reform package that came out of that. It was more kind of an assessment of the issues that have arisen and what are some of the possible solutions. The other work that we have been involved in has been on the Senate side, has spent a lot of time, and this, as Multnomah County mentioned, Nancy Bennett mentioned that former Commissioner Wheeler was very active in looking at some of the equity consequences, and the Senate Revenue Committee in their last session or last interim did direct us to conduct a study on that, and we did kind of try to enumerate the degree in which that's happened, and again kind of at the end suggesting some potential ways to alleviate that, but it's never really gone beyond kind of a listing of what possible options there might be.
Thank you for that. I think that I've sat here long enough and heard the problems long enough that it's time for us to start putting in our head around the fact that we have the devil we know, and then there's the devil we don't know. And the devil we know is getting pretty devilish at this point. And so at some point, we're going to have to start talking about the devil we don't know, which is changes to what has become a pretty ugly system. I don't think we need to belabor it over this bill or this day, but I guess I want to put in the committee's mind that we've heard enough just in this week's testimony, let alone the past years that I've sat in this chair, that this is something that we need to start looking at. I will go back to that revenue, that task force, and read what their specific recommendations were. I'm not sure that this legislature is prepared to put together a task force, but I would encourage all of you in who know this issue to start the conversation with their communities about what changes might look like. because we have a lot of constituencies, and while we're all none of us understand the system we have, so it's going to be even harder for them to understand the system that we might change it to. So, yes, Representative Arnold.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I completely agree with the idea that we need to get to work on. I think this the devil we know has gotten pretty devilish is a great quote that I hope someone uses because it's really true. As Representative Wand was talking and giving us a specific example using the library, I was thinking about the report we had gotten from the assessor in Multnomah County about the inequities between properties of similar value but with very, very different tax results. Property tax results. And my recollection is that Multnomah County had an extreme differences within the county that were serendipitously, there's that word again, based on things that I'm certain made sense to the people who drafted Measures 5 and 50, but in the real world don't make any sense at all. In the practical world, and we're living with this completely nonsensical, crazy, well, I'll use your word, devilish tax system, and at the same time, our local governments, our school districts, our counties are going broke because of the way those, at least in part, because of the way those inequities work. I applaud Representative Wand for bringing the issue to us. I do appreciate the feeling of coming into the room and recognizing that everybody who works with this stuff regularly opposes your idea. I've been in that boat too. but I do appreciate the fact that you're helping us reopen the conversation, and I think we need to continue reopening it until we come up with something which is more rational. And I want to make just one final comment. I don't think we're going back to it. But the tax system that Oregon had on property before Measure 5 was a fair and relatively honest system. It did depend on the assessor getting the assessments correct. But it was a system that basically said the voters have agreed that the district should have this many dollars to spend in a given year. We have that much property value to support this many dollars. We do an arithmetic calculation to figure out what the tax rate is, and we're done. We're finished. And we send out a property tax bill based on that. And it was simple. It was fair. It worked. When property values went up rapidly, the rate went down because you were collecting the dollars, not a rate, and it worked. I think, I doubt very much we'll go back to something quite that simple. I would sure like to. I think it worked well, and we ought to look at all of the possibilities, including that one. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the chance to vent a little.
Any further comments? Thank you, Paul, and thank you to those who came. Anyone else want to weigh in here? And I welcome to come up. But thank you very much, Representative Juan, for bringing this forward and pointing us in a direction we absolutely have to start moving into, and that will be to be continued. And I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3253. Committee members, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2543 for the purpose of this bill. You want to remind us what it is in a hurry, Mazin, before you...
Sure.
Or I can go ahead and do it. I don't think you need to. The bill is the bill. It is a placeholder for changes to the senior property tax deferral program. We have had a discussion about the fact that it is a program that needs a sort of a major review, and this is sort of the placeholder bill. What it does is not, it's just a skeleton bill for changes. So what we are proposing today, the co-chair and I, is to put together and appoint a work group to fill in the blanks and make this bill into something that we can bring back to you with a clear changes that need to be made to the provisions of our senior property tax deferral program. Is that any questions on what we're trying to do here? Yes.
I'm sorry, this is an actual bill we're in the work session, or is this a recommendation?
The work session, we have to open a bill to talk about it.
Right.
This is the bill that is the bill that has been put together as a bill for future amendment when we have decided what we want to do around the senior property tax deferral program. Okay, this is a very common thing that we do. It is a skeleton, basically. It has the right relating clause and the provisions that we, just enough provisions. Then we are today appointing a work group to go back and come back with the amendments to this bill that would actually get us where we think we want to go.
Yeah. Could I just comment
quickly?
This is the one that where the fund is running out of money, and we absolutely have to do something to deal with the issue right at this session. And I think what Chair Berger and I want to do is to get a work group together so we can power through it and get a recommendation back to the committee that we hope will actually work.
And Representative, you don't have to vote on this bill.
Okay. No, not today.
Not today.
Oh, that was what I was
not today.
Yeah, I realize the panic in your eyes as you were going, do I have to vote on this thing? No,
I
do
not.
Not today.
Not today.
Okay,
what we are, actually, what we are proposing is the following work group to make recommendation. We've asked Mr. Rick Bennett of the AARP, who a lot of seniors are concerned about this. We have John Phillips from the Department of Revenue, who has been working on this. Our LRO staff will be involved. We are asking someone from the assessors, an appropriate assessor, to come and help us with the assessor piece and the taxation piece. The co-chairs, Representative Barnhart and I, are also willing to serve on this task force. So,
Work group.
I'm sorry, work group. Thank you. Okay. So, is all we are doing is announcing the formation of this work group and the members of this work group, and we'd like to be kind of flexible to get together and start coming up with changes.
Yeah, should we ask if anyone else wants to?
Well, I suspect someone, if some other group.
On the committee?
Yeah. Does anybody on the committee want to come forward? Don't all volunteer at once. We've got you all. Chair Barnhart and I have been working on this sort of together anyway, and we know you're all busy, and this is sort of near and dear. So rather than assign you folks, we thought we'd continue the work we've started. Okay? Without further questions or comments, I am going to close the work session on House Bill 2543 to the great relief of Representative Air Brewer.
Thank you.
And a representative from Troutville.
Okay. And I'm going to open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 3368. Committee members, this is a bill you have heard before with a different name, and I'm going to have, or with a different number. I'm going to ask Mazin to go over the provisions of this bill.
Uh,
Chair Berger and members of the committee, this bill, when you heard it first, it was House Bill 2477. This is the bill that comes out of the task force that Representative Nathanson came and talked to you about. This is about the simplification and efficiency in work task force. This primarily, when you discussed it, it was about simplifying some of the notifications of, you know, the tax bills of the certified mail versus the regular mail and so on. And at that time, the House Bill 2477 had a relating clause of relating to taxation, and it probably was not the right relating clause, so it was redrafted in the new format of House Bill 3368 with a different relating clause to just to the communication of the property taxation, and that's what brings it back to you.
Thank you, Ms. And it was, I think we're all scratching our head and remember way back when a few weeks ago, early on, when Representative Nathanson brought this forward, we had a discussion of it. I don't believe there were anybody came forward and objected to these. These are not, my understanding, major policy changes. They are cleaning up sort of the form and the way we do these and some language. I think while we're all head scratching, does anyone have any questions of Mazin or questions around this that come to mind?
Should anybody be heard?
Nobody has signed up to be heard.
No.
Nobody's jumping up here. What's your pleasure here? Are you satisfied to move this? Representative Barnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move. Now, are we in a work session?
Yes, we are in work session.
We are in work session. All right, I'll move the
House. Wait.
We're not in a work session.
Didn't I say?
I said possible.
Oh, okay, then I will
close the public hearing.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 3368 and open a work session on House Bill 3368. How's that?
Thank you.
Thanks,
Madam Chair. I will move House Bill 3368 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Barnhart moves House Bill 3368 with a do-pass recommendation. Any comments? Any objections? Without objections, it is moved to the House floor with a do-pass recommendation. And I think we will ask Representative Nathanson to carry this, since it's her bill. If she doesn't want to, we can find somebody else, okay? With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 3368. Enjoy your Monday, members of the committee. What are you, 9 o'clock?
I'm looking at the time.
I get them done, Representative Barnhart.
Yes, you do.
And I am going to adjourn today's House Revenue Committee.